Now, this is already has side one, most of 324-83, so are we...
I'll remark that.
So we're, okay, we'll remark. Okay, Tony, so that we can identify your voice for the record, will you state your voice for the record prior to making a comment on either or all of the subject circled on your sheet there?
What do you want, just my name?
Yes.
Tony Tammy Taylor Osborne, Post Office Box 936, Barrow, Alaska.
Okay, now you can proceed with the remarks about any or all of those.
Okay. Am I talking too soft?
Robin,
yes. Okay. In regards to House Bill number 140, the answer in whether or not we should have capital punishment, I would definitely say yes. I wouldn't want anybody out on the streets that had committed murder and been let loose or put such a high bail on that they couldn't even get out. I think they should also set something like a mandatory bail. Myself, I'd probably put it at $10 million so they couldn't even come up with a 10%. You know, but that's just my idea. Under House Bill number 571, if we can get even more than five judges, that would be great. I agree with that. House Bill number 698. An act relating to marijuana. Isn't that the one to where we want to delegalize it?
Well, we want to recriminalize it. As you know, right now the statute provides for a criminal penalty for anyone apprehended with more than 4 ounces of marijuana. This will make that even that 4 ounce amount a crime.
Okay, I agree with that. However, my own opinion is that we should delegalize it, and possession of any whatsoever would be a criminal offense. I also think that maybe they should have stricter laws and mandatory set-down, like they have for rape right now.
They have presumptive sentencing.
Yeah, for like even possession of any amount of illegal substances.
You want a presumptive sentence in the statute for any amount of illegal substance?
Of either, I don't care what kind of drug it is, whether it's related to marijuana, cocaine, heroin, anything. Because we're looking at our kids. Even, you know, we can't do it with alcohol because that's too well known. But why in the heck let cocaine and all that be even more well known? Because the kids can carry that with them anywhere, and that's our future, and we don't want to ruin our future.
Very good. That it?
Oh, I could sit here and talk for hours.
Okay.
You know, about different ideas I have, but... Could I say one thing?
Certainly.
Earlier we were talking about our juvenile system and whatnot, and you were stating that we were getting different ideas from different states, and you had all kinds of paperwork and whatnot in regards to the way the correction facilities are ran in different states.
Yeah, what you were referring to is we've looked at corrections facilities and their operations in a number of other states as they relate to Alaska's. Primarily that investigation was conducted with regard to House Bill 103, which would have, and is still an active bill, which created a Department of Corrections from the division that it is now. Right at as of this moment, there is an executive order that created a Department of Corrections which contained adult corrections only. And House Bill 103 in its form that left the House would have created a Department of Corrections to deal with every individual in the state who had been adjudicated, whether they were juvenile or adult. At the present time, the new department will handle just adult adjudicated criminals, or adult criminals period, I guess, not only adjudicated, all of them, and even charged adults awaiting trial. And the juvenile portion of the corrections department will remain within the Department of Health and Social Services for the present time.
Well, I was wondering if maybe you could maybe do some kind of a study as far as the Washington State corrections facilities go, because they don't only have their youth center, but they also have a way to protect their kids from the environment which they were in trouble with. Also, it would be advisable maybe to see what we could do as far as making the state responsible for the children if they get in trouble and whatnot, instead of the parents, because it's usually within the family where the trouble comes from, and why throw our kids right back into the problem without the problem being resolved? And you can see that through all the different girls' schools, boys' schools, and co-ed schools that are state-run, which are detention centers in the state of Washington. And the reason I know about this is because I was brought up by one, and I don't think I've done so bad.
Is there anything further?
That's about it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hello, Frank.
Hello,
Al. Al, I just want to ask you one question here. See, we've been looking after this gravel road up to that gravel about 6 or 7 miles up. We've been asking for that road for over 15 years, I think, and we haven't got anything out of it. We've been trying to haul gravel from up there for a couple of years, a couple of winters during the winter, but the two last winters we haven't had enough snow to haul gravel from up there, so we sure would like to know anything about roads or anything like that.
Okay, Frank, in regards to your question on that, recently, about 4 years ago, that we had placed some money with the BI of Indian Affairs for a road, and they have not responded to it. But what I'd like is the local government, the City Council of Norvik, to put that in as a request for their capital money. Also, Mike Scott would like to respond to that one.
Yeah, Frank, we know that has been a long time request, and whenever the city has made it an official priority, we have tried to secure funding. And as a matter of fact, 4 years ago, the Senator Ferguson and Representative Schaefer at the time were successful in obtaining $700,000 for heavy equipment for trucks, and as well as some money to obtain that gravel that's there, put out a partial road, or actually a trail, not really a road, but a trail, essentially, that would support that heavy equipment. But after they got into the construction, I found that they were short of money, what was originally requested. So, unfortunately, the request was too low to actually complete the work that was done. But certainly, if the city does make it a priority, and we do know the city streets, you know, get pretty bad during the winter or during the spring. It gets pretty muddy, all right. So I'm sure that Senator Ferguson and Representative Adams will do whatever they can to obtain additional funding for that road to the gravel site.
Frank Wells in Narvik, I hope that we have answered your question there. And is there further questions out of Narvik?
None at this time.
Thank you very much. Going around to different stations, is there any further questions from any stations?
From Wainwright.
Go ahead, Eva and Wainwright.
Yes, I have the week ago that was going to ask some questions to Al Adams. Her name is Stefania Kayuta.
Okay, go ahead and put Ms. Kayuta comes, please.
Mr. Adams.
Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, from a survey that the University of Alaska did, they gave the statistics that the buying power in the Arctic was 17,000 to 4,000 in Fairbanks. And I was wondering, I'm curious, why this is and maybe why the reason for this.
Nathalia, we think we heard the question. Could you please repeat it maybe just a little bit louder if you could? Thank you.
Okay. Yes, the University of Alaska did a survey, I think about 2 years ago, and I don't have the papers with me on the professor that did the survey, but their statistics show that the buying power in the Arctic was 17,000 in contrast to the same buying power in Fairbanks for 4,000. And that seems like a very large spread, and I was curious why.
Yeah, Nathania, just real quick on that. That's not too surprising to us. In fact, Senator Ferguson and Representative Adams have been trying to convince people here in Juneau that there is that higher cost of living in the bush, and specifically in their district, which is basically the high Arctic. And so we've continually fought that battle, that educational battle, to convince them that the costs are higher. Some reasons for that, pretty basic. Transportation certainly is one. You know, just getting things into the villages or into the North Slope. Then everything is associated with that, fuel, so the utilities are really high. But basically, you get back to transportation being probably the main determinant as to why things are so high. I mean, it affects everything, food, utilities, your clothing, your building materials, everything. And it's simply high because the freight rates are so high, and that's one problem that we've been struggling with for the last several years. They got a handle on the utility problem with the fuel oil, and there's a subsidy program now for the power cost assistance program that will be continued again. The next, I guess, hurdle will be the freight one, and we looked at many options. State-owned aircraft to fly things in. That was met with a resounding thud by the air carriers, saying that it was government competing with private enterprise, but Representative Adams financed a study or secured funding to finance a study to look at a backhaul system with all the barges to do the annual sea lift up north and see what we could do there to lower costs. The conclusion there was that it wasn't didn't help costs too appreciably, or actually deflate them much. So we're looking at a lot of alternatives there, but that's the reason why you see the disparities. And, if we could just find a little more support for our contention that our living costs are so much higher, we'd have an easier time. But as you know, it's always a battle down here, and you certainly have two of the finest in Senator Ferguson and Representative Adams, so I'm sure they'll do their best to bring those disparities down.
Thank you.
Is there further questions from Wainwright, Diva?
No, we don't have any more.
Charlie Curtis in Kiana, do you have any questions there?
Charlie Curtis is here in Kotzebue, and he is just an observer. We have one participant to testify, and that's Jim Wilson from Cobuck.
Fine. Would you put him on, please?
Well, in Cobuck, we had our runway extended and completed a couple summers ago, and the following spring, high waters washed out about 200 feet of the runway. And what I was just wanting to bring to your attention was if we have any more flooding, we're afraid that more of the runway will wash out, and there is some road construction going to be going in Kobuk, to my knowledge, this summer, and I just thought that maybe you could add a special appropriation to save costs, you know, of doing something another year when there won't be any construction, to go ahead and put riffraff around the runways to protect it from any flood damage that might occur.
Senator Ferguson and I are looking at that in order to continue keeping the runway in Kobuk because we do know of the runoff and the flooding of the airport and the removal of the gravel during this time, and we are presently looking into it, and also Mike Scott would like to respond to this.
Yeah, Jim, as Representative Adams indicates, we are looking into it, and as you remember from the constituent public hearing that we had there in Kobuk to gather your legislative priorities for the upcoming session, that was identified as a problem. We talked with DOT, and it's unfortunate, but that runway is right in the path of a floodplain, and they say that the only alternative to that would be to really build the airport up about 25 feet, and we would be looking at a cost of about $20, $25 million for an airport like that. An option other than that is to move the runway to land that is not in the floodplain, which is too far from town. Then you have the problems there, and they say that, well, we have the runway at Doll Creek that is being extended, you know, the 5,000-foot runway there, and that might be the best alternative to rather extending or showing up the runway to the 2,200 feet that they apparently had built there. And we know that you're at 1,800 feet. Associated with that, you'd ask us for runway lights. And Senator Ferguson, in the supplemental capital budget, has put in $325,000 for your runway lights for the runway. And I know that Representative Adams supports that on the House side, so you should see that shortly, because that is a supplemental appropriation.
Okay, thanks for looking into it. I know you guys know best on this, but like I said, just talking on the phone with the contractor, he mentioned that that might have never occurred if there was, you know, riffraff along the edge there. So I just thought I'd, you know, tell you that it's, you know, a way to save a nickel there in the future years, you know, to go ahead and do it now instead of some other year while there's some equipment.
Yeah, no, Jim. In fact, we share that same concern. That's really the approach that we originally took when we looked into it. Our problem is that on erosion projects that we've done in the district, Deering, NOAATAC, in particular NOAATAC, where we've actually had things put in there to try and help that problem, it hasn't worked out so well. The local people have probably come up with better suggestions than the contractors have, and we're going to see what we can do to get that going. But the problem at Kobuk is that it's simply a floodplain, and a riprap or any other sort of erosion control device, we haven't found that would really work in a situation like that. Shishmaref is another case in point where we've had serious erosion problems where a riprap just didn't work. And in a place where it's a floodplain, it's more than just a simple erosion. We're talking about outright just degradation of the ground itself all around, and simply showing up around the perimeter of the runway wouldn't help us too much. But not to be cynical, but maybe the contractor would just like to have another contract and would suggest that as an alternative simply for more business. But we really have taken a look at it and have talked to the professionals in the field, and it's their judgment that really it would be a rather tough situation to try to correct unless the runway is moved several miles away.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. We'll see you later.
Kotzebue, do you have any more participants?
Yes, we do. We have Robert Mullock from Shungnak.
Thank you. Put Robert on, please.
Yeah, we had a constituent meeting last fall on our priorities from Shungnak. And what I would like to know is where these stand. I think you've got a list of them already.
Okay, Robert, this is Mike Scott. Real quick, Representative Adams will tell you what he's doing on the House side. On the Senate side, at this point, for your immediate needs, in a supplemental bill, there is 400,000 for the water and sewer system upgrade, and 325,000 for the runway lights, as well as in the governor's original capital budget, funds to extend the runway to 3,000 feet. And I know that Representative Adams has even more.
Now, we support both of those, the runway lights and the water sewer for Shungnak. The other thing that you wanted was the completion of the combined facility completion on this one. And so we have placed $160,000 to complete that village. One of the things that people in the villages need to understand, this is only a first-run supplement capital. And I hate to give out numbers like this because this is subject to a veto by the governor. And at the end of the session also, we'll put another operating and capital budget together to take care of areas that did not get into the first run. But I would like to mention that it's subject to veto by the governor, and I don't like to name particular projects given people hope that it'll get in and then get vetoed by the governor. Robert, do you have any further questions?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about that. State Trooper, our constable, I think it's one of the higher priorities that we had.
Robert, that has to be addressed by in the public safety budget. That is an operating item, and that request will have to come from the agency itself on either the constable or the trooper position that you have mentioned.
Okay, so in other words, I'm barking up the wrong tree, right? The best thing to do would it be to go to request this to the state troopers?
Yeah, one of the problems that the department find is they're looking at cost effectiveness of that, and Kotzebue being hub, and they've got the state troopers presently positioned there. But if we can get the support of the agency, is we can look at it again.
Robert, I think the other communities, outlying communities from Shungnak, like Ambler and Kobuk, have almost the same feeling on this right here, why the urgency needs to be up there, because of the fact that in a time of search and rescue, we need a verification before we leave. And when we have an emergency, we have to wait other conditions from Kotzebue. And if I understand right, they have about 3 or 4 state troopers here in Kotzebue. Maybe 2.
One of the responsibilities that we place in some of these public safety programs also is the village police safety officer is supposed to take some of these responsibilities. Of course, they're directly under sometimes the constable or the state trooper. And so these particular responsibilities, I think, have to be defined and looked at, Robert.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for
it's
your
like time. That.
Appreciate them. Is there any stations that have any participants?
Alan, do you know this is Ruthie and Sully?
Go ahead, Ruthie.
Yes, I have one more participant. Her name is Hannah Loon, last name spelled L-O-O-N.
Okay. Hello, I'd like to ask Al Adams. Mike Scott and Frank Ferguson's office had come to Salt Lake some time ago and went to visit what types of needs were needed by the villages. And the city council had submitted a list of priority needs by the village. And one of the things that I asked on was water and sewer. And is Salt Lake ever going to have water and sewer in the village? Is my question.
One of the things that it is definitely on the Selwick Water Sewer is one of the priorities of the village council. And that's where it sits at this present time. One of the things that we need to look at also for Selwick is the design of it. And I think Mike Scott was in the public meeting with you at that time and would like to respond to you.
Yeah, Hannah, you might remember at that meeting, but we did talk about the pros and cons of the water, a running water and sewer system. We have a real tough time in selling people a bill of goods for some political gain, and and Senator Ferguson's not willing to mislead the people of Selwick into thinking that they'll have full running and water and sewer system without having to pay for it. Now, sewer systems, water and sewer systems that we presently have in certain places are costing people several dollars, some $30, $40, $50, $60, $85 a month for water and sewer. And in that public meeting, we discussed that, and the alternative was to, as you know, last year, Senator Ferguson, Representative Adams, put $125,000 into the budget for humus toilets, and that too has an associated cost with it that the city council said they were willing to accept, and those should be coming to Selwick sometime soon. But the what we settled on was redoing the washateria and looking at settling the dump site and putting an access road to that new dump site. And that's what the city council and the public that was discussed there in that public meeting. And there wasn't, once we laid out the different options and as best we could, that's what was finally agreed to. And that's really what we've been working on as a city council priority down here. To say otherwise, we would simply be misleading the people, and we just can't do that.
Anna, do you have further comments
or
suggestions?
What about the water? I have stated that in that meeting that the water is not safe to drink in the springtime. We had severe cases of impetigo in the summertime and some diarrhea even sometimes in the wintertime. And it's very difficult for people living on the upper, on the school site, to go all the way down and pack water. And that's one of the questions I'd like to ask you. What about safe water to drink?
Yes, Hannah, that's an excellent point. And it's our understanding that THS is to go in there and do the work on the water facility itself. And we'll double check that. And if THS is not, then that of course, is part of the water and sewer concerns that were raised at that meeting and will be looked at in the total package. But it's our understanding at this point that PHS will be doing that aspect of the work.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Thank you very much.
Ruthie and Selwick, is there any further participants from there?
Alan Juno, that's all I have for today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any participants from any station?
Yes, this is Eva Blue. Yes.
Go ahead, Eva.
Wainwright, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, we can hear you. Go ahead, Eva and Wainwright. Put your participant on.
Mr. Adams?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hear me, Mr. Adams?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, this is open questioning on any subject.
This is opening question on any subject, but I don't know if I can give you an answer to any open subject.
Okay. I'm the public safety officer here in Wainwright, employed by the Norfolk Borough. I was wondering what we would have to go through to get a emergency vehicle up here. The borough will not provide us one. We've had several incidences where there's almost been deaths of people freezing outside during our patrol period, and we do not have a vehicle to move people around. So I was wondering how we go through the state and maybe getting this vehicle.
I will respond to you on that one. Is we put a money for a vehicle 2 years ago, and I will discuss it tonight with Mayor Brower on this and see what type of plan do they have for the vehicles to the North Slope Borough, since they have the capability of handling and they got the contract to handle public safety for that particular district. But I will discuss that. That was placed in the budget, as I said earlier, 2 years ago.
Thank you.
You betcha.
Representative Adams, this is Katsubu. Glenna Parrish from Buckland has a question for you.
Okay, Mary, put on Glenda, please.
Since our new airport is going to be completed probably next month. I was wondering if we're going to have new runway lights for the airport.
When you're number one, and there ain't no number two.
That particular runway, that's the new runway in Buckland, will have the new light system. It's on the past appropriation that goes along with that runway.
Glenda, in addition to that, Representative Adams' office and ours has been working very hard on that, and we had the $325,000 in the capital supplemental for those runway lights. We talked with DOT to reconfirm where the progress was on the airport itself, and they did let us know that there was some additional funding left over, and in fact, DOT was given direction today to have the contract drawn up for the runway lights with the remainder of the runway appropriation. So you should have runway lights there soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Glenda. Any further questions from any station?
Al, this is Bob again. You're probably aware that I was working in the Inubak pilot program at Chungnak, and just understand that there's not going to be any funding for this program next year. I was wondering, is there a way to go through the legislature to try to get this type of funding, or does it have to be through the school district?
On this particular issue, that goes through the school district board of directors. We have provided for that those programs, if you look at House Bill 105 under Section 8, I believe it is, I don't have the bill before me, but which would take care of programs, as you have mentioned, not only that, but for bilingual. And I would suggest that you go before the school board and put a proposal or your concerns before them.
Is this in effect,
Bob? Would you repeat, please? You broke up when you were talking.
I say, is this in effect now?
That's correct. And I don't know if they have programmed all their money for this particular year, but I'm talking about next fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
They go before the school board is because Senator Ferguson and I always believe in local control, and so we have always mandated and given funds either to the school district, municipal of Kotzebue, or to the villages around.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Is there any stations that have any questions?
This is Kotzebue, Al. We just got a call. We just have a call coming in, and we'll be asking that question for someone in just a few minutes.
Okay, while I'm waiting for the question to come in from Kotzebue, I would like to remind my constituents, wherever you may be, from Taktovik to Deering, that if you have any problems with your permanent fund dividends, to please call my office or Senator Ferguson's office collect. And I repeat those numbers again. It's 465-3706 is my office. Senator Ferguson's office is 465-4989. And when you call us in, please also give us your Social Security number so we can call directly to Department of Revenue and try to respond to your concerns as early as possible. I am ready for Mary in Kotzebue.
Mary, I guess while we're waiting for you, maybe you're on the phone, just wanted to say that there was a meeting this morning in Senate Finance where they did talk about the governor's new revised operating budget, and just wanted to pass along for all the municipalities and unincorporated communities that the governor has included in his budget essentially Senator Ferguson's proposal to combine municipal assistance and revenue sharing into one program and give each of the municipalities a minimum $100,000 plus an area differential, which is a significant increase over the base $25,000 for revenue sharing with its cost of living, and it's the simple straight figure for municipal assistance. The present, to give an example, a community of 200 people would receive the $25,000 in revenue sharing plus approximately $37,000 in municipal assistance. So you can see that that's about a 100% increase under Senator Ferguson's proposal that's been adopted by Governor Sheffield. So we looked with interest to that new revised budget of the governor's, and hopefully it will make its way through the legislative process.
Marion Kotzebue, you have your question?
Yeah, Al, this is Marion Kotzebue. Don Morgan had a couple of questions. The first one was if there could be assistant district attorney or district attorney for the Kotzebue area, and the second question was if there could be a reasonable jail for the Kotzebue area, and he would like for both you and Senator Ferguson to support the Department of Corrections.
Both Senator Ferguson and I have no problem in supporting Division of Corrections. We have placed, in fact, on the House side, which Senator Ferguson will get to later, a bill addressing Division of Corrections, taken and setting up a separate department from Department of Health and Social Services. As far as the other question was concerned, was the assistant DA, yes, we're looking into that, and hopefully that we can perhaps take one of the positions that they have in Nome, move it over to Kotzebue, but that still is in we're looking into this. Mike would like to say something as this.
Thank you, Al. On that, Mary, and for Don, 2 years ago, Senator Ferguson got into the operating budget of the Department of Law a position for an attorney for in Kotzebue that was to act as an assistant district attorney. It was a decision of the Department of Law that they did not want to fill that position, which they had originally committed to us, would be filled by February 15th. The Department of Law, we won't say the gentleman's name, decided not to fund that. Actually, I'll say who it is. It's Mr. Dan Hickey, decided that there didn't need to be a district assistant DA in Kotzebue. The money was there. His rationale was that he wasn't going to put it in his budget for next year, and we're a little bit more than concerned about that. We have a new Superior Court in Kotzebue. We're trying to get it up and functioning. It delays things when you have to wait for the state to present its case. And we're a little bit concerned that possibly the Department of Law and Mr. Hickey have taken a short-sighted view of the situation in Kotzebue and actually for the region. And so we'll be looking to see what we can do to have that position reinserted in the budget.
Thank you, Al and Mike.
Thank you. I hope
we have no other questions from Kotzebue.
Thank you very much, and I hope Don Morgan, if he has any more questions, to call into Kotzebue. Is there any stations or villages that have any questions or suggestions?
Just talking, Mary, this is Mike, just talking further on what Don raised about the Department of Corrections. Representative Adams indicated correctly, Senator Ferguson doesn't have a particular problem with there being a Department of Corrections, but does have a problem when the capital budget simply reflects the Department of Corrections jails, and the Department of Health and Social Services budget shows no funding for clinics. And he wonders whether or not we have our priorities in order when we're taking care of people in the jails and not taking care of people, law-abiding citizens' health. So that's his only real concern with that Department of Corrections. There seems to be this headstrong feeling that they have to satisfy this court case, this Cleary decision, and in turn grab all the capital dollars that they can in the area of health and human services. And it's unfortunate, and it's, Senator Ferguson believes the wrong priority, that of the $100 million they're requesting, the Department of Corrections, or actually the division at this point, $50 million of that is for a maximum security facility, which they can't even get online for more than 2 years, and why do they need $50 million when it only costs $5 million through the planning, the site preparation, and everything else? So he thinks it's possibly a waste of $45 million just sitting on the books when we have hospitals and clinics that we're trying to repair and build, especially in our district, that aren't being funded because of this perceived need to go headlong into building jails for corrections.
Thank you, Mike. I think we have one other comment from Kotzebue.
Thank you very much. Mary, this is going very well. We just received a phone call from NOTAC on the permanent fund dividend question, so it's going out. Go ahead, Mary, with your participant.
funding is available. He's not real. He said that they lowered insurance costs and it's safe.
Hello, Alan, Mike. Mary is trying to push me into this conference. Well, I just want to send my greetings down there, and you guys are doing a very good job for us.
I didn't hear your name, but I'm going to guess it's Elsie Williamson.
No, this is Lydia.
How you doing, Lydia? Is there any stations with any questions?
We sure
will, Florence.
Now, Mary, you know, you can never shove people and force people into this thing. This is supposed to be participatory democracy.
No, he said the value of it is lowers insurance costs and makes for safer clients.
Do you want that
said? I don't think so.
Okay.
He's particularly interested in funding.
While we're waiting for Barrow, is there any other stations that have any questions?
Representative Adams, this is Florence, the moderator in Barrow, and I have a question for you from Grant Thompson. He would like to know what kind of funding is available for Alaska in the Alaskan Aviation Safety Foundation.
In that particular aviation, that particular bill is still in House Finance, and I think they are requesting approximately $750,000 for that particular study. What I'd like to do is get a copy of last year's studies to Grant Thompson and Barrow so he can evaluate what they want the money for. And so what I'd like to do is send it because I have some questions in regards to that. Also, Mike Scott would like to respond to that one.
Yeah, Florence, for Grant, the Aviation Safety Foundation concept does sound very appealing. Unfortunately, the real problem in the aviation industry that's really strapping the operators are the insurance costs. And are paid that have no relationship to the amount of accidents that occur. When you look at at nationwide, Alaska pays the highest premiums, but the actual ratio to accidents to premiums are not consistent with other states. And the only place we basically, 97% of the insurance for Alaska air taxi operators and airlines is through Lloyd's of London in England. And that's the only place where we can get insurance. 2 years ago, Senator Ferguson, along with Senator Eliason, who represents southeastern Alaska, as many air taxi operators, introduced a bill to set up the Aviation Indemnity Corporation of Alaska to help the air taxi operators with their insurance, their premiums. We received many, many requests to do something about the increasing problems with high insurance rates. So the bill was introduced. Well, lo and behold, the insurance industry came out and said, you're meddling in private business, and we're against this bill. The Alaska Air Carriers Association Board of Directors and their executive director came down to Juneau and lobbied against this very bill that several of their members had asked us to introduce and bring some relief on their behalf. And we were somewhat dumbfounded by this reaction by the executive committee and executive director, which was contradicting specifically what the individual members were saying. And in turn, they suggested that we set up this Aviation Safety Foundation program as an alternative. Well, insurance rates haven't gone down. The Aviation Safety Program has not helped that. Possibly we have increased the efficiency of our pilots, but still insurance rates hover at higher rates now. We see a new mandate from the Civil Aeronautics Board in Washington, D.C., that's saying that Alaska will, you know, among the other states too, we'll have to carry a higher liability coverage for each individual seat. Alaska does have require higher minimums than the CAB is now requiring, but when a new order takes effect, there will have to be a $50,000 increase in the liability per seat. That's going to have a significant impact on the individual air taxi operators and in turn on the individual consumers. So that's what Senator Ferguson was trying to do as opposed to the Aviation Safety Foundation program. And it's unfortunate the executive board of the Air Carriers Association and specifically the insurance interests that are represented on that board and the executive director of the Air Carriers Association opposed that legislation on the basis that it was meddling in private enterprise, because it was far from that. In fact, was going to break up a monopoly in this state by Lloyd's of London. And hopefully there'll be some more support for a bill such as that that will be introduced, and we can see some results from it.
Florence and Bear, I hope we answer Grant Thompson's question then.
I'm sure you heard the answer over KDRW. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any stations that have any questions? If there's no questions, today's guest for Senator Ferguson and I are from Cottsview. We had Jackie and Joy Hill, Dennis Tippman, and Willie Goodwin. And also from Bear, we had Eugene Brower and Ralph Anderson visiting today. We'd like to thank all our visitors and constituents that do get down to Juneau to please stop in, bring us their concerns so we can address them. Asking one more time, is there any questions before we close out this teleconference? If not, on behalf of Senator Ferguson, his staff, and my staff, this is Representative Adams, closing out this month's constituent meeting. Remember, you can always write to us at either one of us at Pouch V, Juneau, Alaska, 99811, or you can call us collect at my office, 465-3706, or you can call Senator Ferguson's office at 465-4989. And on behalf of us, we'd like to also thank the radio stations KBRW, KOTZ, for carrying this particular teleconference. And thank you very much. And we'd like to thank all the stations also and the LIO office. Thank you very much.